Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, a part of the amazing FBA family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader, co-hosted by myself, Michael Veazey, and Jason Miles, top 1% Shopify store owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving e-commerce business, look for The E-commerce Leader on your favorite podcast app and subscribe today. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Michael Veazey from the 10K Collective podcast, a subset of the Amazing FBA podcast, which is geared to the needs of 6, 7, and 8 figure Amazon sellers. Although, in fact, I think today we're talking about VAT. That's going to be pretty much everyone has to think about it these days. So we're talking to the lovely and very smart ladies of Simply VAT, Alex Wyatt, originally from Canada, now resident in the UK, and Louise Boussmar, originally from France, also in the UK. And they've been guiding us through the very choppy waters of VAT, even choppier than I thought, but they have some really smart solutions as well. So the first episode, we talked about the basics of VAT. What is it? And you know, what triggers VAT registration? Really important to really deep dive into this to the extent at least you educate yourself, in my opinion. So don't forget to check that out. We've also talked about the differences across Europe, and it turns out there are a lot of differences. So you really need to educate yourself about that. So you home in on the differences in the particular countries you may be selling in. So today, ladies, welcome back. First of all, we're going to talk about Brexit. Thank you very much for being willing to plunge into this.
Thanks for having us again. We're really excited. This is probably our favorite topic between Louise and I at the moment to be talking about, as we are core focus at the moment and Simply VAT is helping our clients navigate through the likes of Brexit. So get ready, buckle up. You're in for a treat.
I love your enthusiasm. I can't say that I imagine it's going to be shared by anyone selling. They're going to be going, oh my goodness, we've got to deal with this. But yes, it's going to be exciting stuff. So first of all, Brexit, it sounds like a dumb question, but with the VAT hat on or a tax compliance hat on, what is it?
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having us again. So when it comes to VAT, the impact that Brexit will have, the main impact is that the UK, from the end of the transition period, which is set on the 31st of December 2020, the UK will be leaving what we call the single market and the customs union of the European Union. So that means, ultimately, is that the EU VAT rules, as we currently know them, will no longer apply to and in the UK. Moving forward, basically. So the UK will be basically considered a third country from the 1st of January 2021.
Okay, so we're going to be out in the cold, as I guess was the entire point of Brexit, if one thinks there is a point to it. So from the 1st of January 2021, we are a third party country. Now, I know there's some nuances about that, because the UK, for any North Americans listening or even Europeans, shame on you who don't understand the geography of this complicated place. The UK is a United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Great Britain consists of three regions. They're not technically countries. Some people see they are, some not. England, Scotland, and Wales. Of course, the Scots sometimes say they want an independent country, and Northern Ireland is part of the island of Ireland, but the southern bit of Ireland is the Republic of Ireland, which is a completely separate country, is part of the European Union, has the euro. So that's a bit of background for those who don't understand the geography of the British Isles. And if you're a North American scratching your head, I'm sorry about this. I didn't create it, but this is the reality. Now, let's talk about Northern Ireland, because it's not just going to be simply part of the UK going forward, is it, from the European Union's point of view?
Absolutely. Actually, that's a really interesting one. So you might remember that there were so many conversations and debates about Northern Ireland. That was one of the issues to get a withdrawal agreement in the first place. So basically, the UK government did not want to have a hard border between Northern Ireland and the rest of Great Britain. So the solution was to come up with what is called the Protocol on Northern Ireland and Ireland. And when it comes to VAT, what it means is that ultimately Northern Ireland will remain subject to VAT EU rules. So it will kind of be as if Northern Ireland was still part of the EU for VAT purposes when it comes to goods, so not services, but only supplies of goods. which is quite interesting.
That is quite interesting. So we've got a strange exception within the, one of the four regions, if that's even the correct term, one of the four countries of the United Kingdom. It's not looking quite so united now. Northern Ireland is going to be treated as an EU member for VAT on goods only, so not services. So now one obvious question that brings up, maybe we should look into this in a bit, is whether there's an option there for English or Welsh or Scottish companies to have some kind of foothold in Northern Ireland and benefit from that. So maybe we should look at that in a second, because the first thing I think, having defined roughly what Brexit is to look at what the problems and risks that are that come up, and then let's look at the solutions or how to reduce the issues, the risks. So what would you guys say are the big problems and risks that are coming up for businesses generally? And I suppose we're going to have to break it up into UK businesses, EU businesses, non-EU businesses.
So I guess the first big one is going to be for people that are fulfilling goods or shipping goods between the UK and the EU. So what people could do before was ship cross-border using the distance selling thresholds to private customers, or if they could even ship cross-border into the EU into fulfillment centers and just file a simple EC sales list. But now, after Brexit, the end of the Brexit transition period, sorry, what will happen is we will actually be seeing a border there, and everything will be seen as an export from the UK and an import into the EU. And same thing vice versa. So an export from the EU and an import into the UK. From that perspective, it means that everything going to be as an export will be zero rated for VAT purposes, which is absolutely fine, easy, simple. Make sure you're keeping your proof of export like we talked two episodes ago. But now when you go to import, you're going to need to choose who is the importer of record. Again, we talked about this two episodes ago. The importer of record is the person that is going to be paying the import duties or VAT when the goods are being imported into that specific country. So if you're importing directly to a private customer, you're going to see this a lot more, like this is going to be happening a lot more. You know, you will need to either be VAT registered in each of those countries and account for the VAT on those sales and reclaim your import VAT, or you're going to have to make the end customer the importer of record. Now, if you're using Amazon's EFN network to sell cross-border at the moment, Amazon has said that they will no longer be fulfilling orders cross-border to customers in the EU or vice versa. So if that is what you're currently doing, then you will need to look at changing up your supply chains, because this will no longer be an option. You will either need to just keep fulfilling from the UK to just UK customers, and that's absolutely fine if that's your main market. Or you will also need to add an additional revenue, or not revenue stream, but revenue stream or supply chain going into another EU country, such as France or Germany, importing into those fulfillment centers, VAT registering where you decide to hold your stock, and then you will have access to the distance selling thresholds again. And so that is going to be one huge hurdle to kind of overcome. You need to decide as a business, do you want to add an additional supply chain going into the EU and servicing the rest of the mainland EU? Or do you want to continue just to fulfill from the UK, just to UK customers? So that's question number one for your business planning for after Brexit.
And so the very important question. So what I think that raises for me from the sort of demand side, if you like, assessing a market, because there's always hassle and money and time and effort. And even if it doesn't look like there's money involved, if there's effort involved, time is money. Even if you're a small business entrepreneur and you're doing everything yourself, it's an opportunity cost, right? So I think this situation forces us to evaluate more rationally and more in more hard numbers terms whether there is actually an opportunity to sell in the UK. Because a lot of people sell here because they live here. That doesn't necessarily mean, if you're importing from China, folks, there's no magic about it. I don't get my inventory sent to my house anymore. And a lot of people don't either. It goes from their factory to an FC, you know, fulfillment center. So I think that the hard question is it actually worth selling into certain countries? And the answer may be no. But also, I would say often the answer is yes. I think a lot of UK-based business owners have shipped stuff into the UK and then just left it in UK sellers, fulfillment centers, set up the listings in the European marketplaces that Amazon provides, and then just let it happen. Now, I think we have to make a conscious decision. And I would argue often that the conscious decision is pretty simple. Germany is always worth a look because, A, it's a big marketplace. It's sort of maybe a third, maybe 50% higher than the UK revenue. And that's up till now. That may be bigger, depending on the impact of COVID and everything else. And the relationship of the currencies, I've already talked about euro to dollars, whether you're buying from China or even you're based in the US, it's more stable than the relationship between the pound and the dollar. And that's before Brexit. I mean, let's see what the financial markets do to the pound after A, the handling of Brexit, and B, the handling of COVID, and C, the fact that they're leaving the EU. So what I'm saying is, I think a conscious assessment of the sales side, which I guess is more my business than VAT, is something one needs to sit down and do. And I think the honest answer is often you're going to find that Germany makes more sense than the UK, or it makes sense to do both. And so anyway, so interrupting, but I think I just wanted to say that as a strategic level decision, it's forcing us to make a decision that I think we should make anyway, which is it really worth selling here? Yes or no? Is this product profitable? Yes or no? And I think it's kind of a simple thing, isn't it? So anyway, diversion over. Let's get back to VAT. So going back to my comfort zone and thinking about marketing and selling, what are the other issues then? So the first issue is shipping goods from the UK to EU. Again, if we're talking about somebody from outside of the EU, let's say somebody based in North America, which is the most typical situation that I deal with, what would they need to change about their business and their practices, VAT and the supply chain stuff?
I think, again, going back to, I mean, it depends on where your stock is being held at the moment. But if you are just importing into the UK, you do need to look at that alternative, you know, supply chain. If the alternative, I guess you could go straight into the EU and fulfill from a third party logistics company. But I think from a VAT perspective, not much that is going to be what changes. You cannot no longer fulfill, you know, at least through Amazon between the UK and EU. And this also kind of goes back to the Pan-EU program. Amazon, right now, you can import your goods into a UK fulfillment center. And then Amazon then takes your goods and, using the algorithms behind them, they ship your goods across the different fulfillment centers in the six other EU countries where they have fulfillment centers. And now this is super simple at the moment for businesses. All you have to do is worry about getting your goods into a UK fulfillment center and switching on your Pan-EU FBA settings and making sure your listings are optimized. Now, after Brexit, you will no longer be able to fulfill goods from the UK. Amazon has stated in one of their notices to sellers that they are no longer shipping goods for the Pan-EU program from the UK. So that means you're going to have to look into importing directly into, say, Germany or France or another EU country where they have fulfillment centers, at which point Amazon can then start picking up your goods and shipping them across the different EU countries. So this is going to be a bit of a hurdle because there are lots of sellers, and I know Amazon has pushed a lot of people onto this Pan-EU program. But now, again, you need to look into having two different supply chains or two different, you know, logistics routes into these different markets in order to fulfill to all of these customers. And it's going to cost extra money to, if you think about it, get the different freight forwarders on board. You're going to be having to fill out two different sets of customs declarations. You are going to have to be paying VAT at different rates at two different times. So if you're importing into a country where it has a higher import VAT rate, this is going to disrupt your cash flow maybe a little bit more than it was when you were just importing into the UK. So there are lots of different things that you need to consider when starting to choose these other countries that you're going to start importing into.
Okay, so let me just ask one, I guess it seems to me a relatively simple question that may be naive in this context, that if you are based, say, in the USA and you import goods into Germany where you have a 19% VAT standard rate, if I remember correctly, does that mean that if I sell into France out of Germany, that I'll end up paying that 19%? Is that my VAT rate? Or is that what is the best way of picking a place to import into is another question I'm asking, really.
Yeah, you nailed it, actually. Because again, you're covered once your goods are in the European Union, then you are covered by the distance selling thresholds. So those distance selling thresholds, you can sell cross-border, you charge the sale departure country's VAT rate until you cross over the inbound country's VAT threshold. So absolutely, you'd be charging 19% VAT. So if we're coming back to where might be the most economical place for you to start importing into, Germany might be probably the best one. Now, Germany does have a little bit of a hiccup for non-EU-based businesses because you may need a indirect representative when importing your goods into Germany. Now, these are different to a fiscal representative, and it's down purely to getting your goods through customs. So completely separate from VAT. Sometimes freight forwarders can be the indirect representative, but you may need to also factor this cost into getting your goods into Germany. But once they're in there, you do have a cheaper rate of VAT, and you can start fulfilling cross-border. And on top of that, like you said, Germany is the biggest market in Europe. So you can actually start benefiting right from having being closer to your end customers and having cheaper shipping costs as well once you're in Germany.
And I would say a couple of other things. I mean, first of all, Germany is geographically pretty central to the, well, to Europe, but also reasonably geographically central to the EU five countries that you can sell into: Germany, France, Italy, Spain, and Netherlands. At least it borders all of those. Well, doesn't quite directly border Italy, does it? But almost. So it's not a bad idea. And the other thing, just to clarify, is this sounds a little bit like importing into the US as a UK-based business, which is to say you've got to get it through customs, and that can be a bit of a pain. But once you're into the US, then that's it. You don't need a fiscal representative, at least not as far as I know. At least it didn't used to be. These things are changing all the time. So it sounds quite similar to that if you're familiar with that situation. And so in other words, again, the freight forwarder can sometimes be that person. So it doesn't sound like a very complex barrier compared to having to have a fiscal representative permanently there, like in France, if I understand. Is that about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And actually, I like to throw in these pro tips as well. After the end of the Brexit transition period, France is not requiring UK-based businesses to have a fiscal representative. Normally, France does require non-EU businesses to have a fiscal representative when VAT registering in that country, and they have excluded the UK from that requirement. So that could be another great country to import into as a UK-based business. You don't have to have that additional cost. And it's the same VAT rate here as the UK. It's only 20%.
Okay. Sounds good option. So would that, if I, for example, wanted to import as a UK-based business into Germany, would I need a fiscal representative in Germany?
Not a fiscal representative, no. For VAT purposes, no. It would only be that indirect representative. Whereas in France, you wouldn't require the indirect representative. Lots of representatives happening. Sorry for the confusion.
So in other words, if I want, in neither case would I need to have somebody there to deal with being sort of liable for my VAT ongoing. But in order to get the goods into Germany as a UK-based company owner, I would need to have an indirect representative, which may well be my freight forwarder. But to get it into France, there's no kind of representatives at all needed. Is that right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I've got it. Excellent. Cracking the code here. Okay, good. Well, that's some good options to know about. Thank you. That's very helpful. And a lot of the listeners are UK-based, and the masterminds are run and very much UK-based guys. Although one of the people there is, I better ask this actually, one of the people in the mastermind is a Netherlands, a Dutch national, lives in the Netherlands, but has a UK limited company. I presume that, I ought to check this presumption, because they say it's the mother of all mess ups, isn't it? That if you are living in a EU country, but you have a UK limited company, and I don't think he's the only person in that situation, then presumably the UK limited company is the entity that kicks everything else off, not where the person lives. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's dependent not on where you live personally, unless you're a sole trader. It's where you are and actual company is registered.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about the obligations that you have then. And I know you guys got a little checklist, which sounds really wise. So let's go through the checklist of things that you need to think about before the end of the transition period, because we have this is being recorded in late August. We'll probably put it out pretty soon as well, late August 2020, because I think this is urgent stuff to think about in the, you know, early autumn. What are the things we need to think about in this valuable period of time we have to deal with?
So definitely thinking ahead, because again, what we're going to cover now might take some time to put it in place. But I would say the first thing you need to think about is getting an EERI number. And again, so if you are planning to import into the EU, you'll need a local EERI number so you can get an additional one. You might already have a GB EERI number, but that's not going to suffice you. You're going to have to get a secondary EERI number. Again, the process can be different from one country to another, so you might require some help with that. So have a look at the process to get your EERI number. And then before you move your goods from the UK into the EU, check whether you need any licenses, any certificates, anything. You know, some goods might be controlled, for example. And once we've got the border in place between the UK and the EU, some goods might get, you know, additional checks and things like that. So you have a look at you know, at your goods. Make sure that you don't need any additional licenses to get them through the border. The EU will be implementing checks as well from day one. You may have heard that the UK will be implementing like transitional, like a phased-in checks controls on goods, but the EU will not be doing this. So from day one, you will have your customs declarations due and checks as well on some goods. So that would be the second thing. So make sure you've got the right licenses before moving your goods into the EU. And then based on the whether you want to be the importer of record, whether you want your local customers to be importer of records, just check what the VAT implications will be based on that decision. That would be the first thing to do, I would say, before moving your goods. Keep records of your movements of goods. Just keep really in your commercial records, keep records of that. Check the commodity codes as well of your goods, because again, we mentioned that in a previous episode, but basically the VAT rates could differ based on your commodity codes as well from one country to another. So you're going to have, as a seller, you're going to have to check what VAT rates, what duties apply to your commodity codes. And then you'll be required to value your goods to proceed with your customs declaration, basically. So that's also something you should be expected to do. There are different methods to value goods, so you should be familiar with those, and because you'll be expected to do that. You might want to appoint somebody locally, like a custom agent, to do that on your behalf. So again, this is something that you'll have to consider, take into account the cost of doing so. Some countries offer duty deferment accounts as well, so it could be interesting to look at that as well. And that would mean that you wouldn't have to pay duty at the point of import of the goods, but then later on, which could be interesting in terms of cash flow, for example. And then one last thing is, I would say, speak to your freight forwarders, speak to your partners, speak to the marketplace you're selling on to Amazon, etc. Just make sure that they've got, you've got all the information needed, that there's no additional requirements that could be required. You could get some bad surprises. So just make sure you speak to your anyone involved in your supply chain as well, because you know they might also need additional information from you. So I would say just make sure you speak to your business partners. That would be my tips when it comes to moving goods in the future.
That's quite the list. Thank you for that. It's a very practical thing to go through. One thing I just want to come back on, which is, I guess, more within the sort of customer experience realm, or it has a customer experience implication, the idea of making your customer within European Union an importer of record feels to me a pretty risky strategy, because I think the chances that somebody, even if you say it all over the place, even in some pictures, the chance of somebody not picking up on that because it's so unusual, and then getting angry and causing problems for your account or possibly giving you one-star review feels to me quite risky. I mean, have you got any thoughts or experience around that?
Definitely. And again, as a seller, that's something you should be considering before you start selling after the 1st of January. What kind of customer experience you want to give to your consumers? That's going to impact your competitiveness tremendously, I would say. So it might be easier as a seller and less burdensome to do so, to appoint your consumers as importer of record. But as you've just mentioned, does it really make sense in terms of customer experience? It might also lead to more complications. For example, if a client somehow wants to return the goods, for them, the process of getting the VAT back and things like that just can lead to further complications. So does that really make sense in terms of customer experience? That is something that as a seller, you would have to consider in your strategy moving forward. Alex, if you've got any thought on that.
I think you've covered the main crux of it all. And that's why I think it is really important to reevaluate your strategy going forward and see, is it important? What is the most important thing to you? Is it to keep your costs low, but you might have a little bit of a higher administration burden or a poor customer experience? Or do you want to maybe have a little bit increased supply chain costs, but getting your goods directly into mainland Europe, but now you have access to the distance selling thresholds and you've decreased potentially the amount of returns that you're going to have. You decreased unsatisfied customers because you haven't given them the opportunity to have to even know that they're paying for the VAT. The one great thing about VAT here, and I can say this as a Canadian, is that you don't realize that you're paying the taxes. So a lot of North Americans think, wow, you're paying 20%, upwards of 20% VAT on your prices. But we don't actually notice it in our prices. When you list it, we don't notice that we're paying that much VAT because it's already included. So if you're making these customers pay an additional 20% or X percent when the goods are coming to them, trying to get through customs, then that looks like a huge extra expense to them to try and get their goods through customs. And it's not a good buying experience. And it just looks like you are trying to, you know, raise the prices or there's, you know, hidden fees. And nobody likes hidden fees at all at any buying customer experience that you ever have. So just keep that in mind that the customers don't actually experience the VAT if you are the importer of record and you're already accounting for the VAT at point of sale.
Absolutely. I think really the fact that it's a sweat for us as business owners is our problem to solve. I think Amazon particularly has created an expectation that the buying experience is seamless, easy, quick. You are the king as the customer. So particularly on the Amazon platform, I think it just completely conflicts with that idea. I agree. I think we've made that point enough. So in other words, we're going to have to make sure that we sweat so the customer doesn't. And that brings me to the point of just mentioning that obviously there's a lot to cover. You guys offer free consultation. And if you go to amazingfba.com/simplyVAT, that's a way to go straight to your, you know, booking page to get and a consultation. And clearly that's going to make a lot of sense to do that if you're listening and thinking, how on earth do I deal with this? Get some expert help, don't suffer alone. Now, a couple of little things I just want to touch on. First of all, tell me about the UK government and all this. I know that the EU position on VAT seems reasonably stable. Is the UK government's position on this stable? Is that likely to stay the same over the next few months?
So after the UK has left the single market and has left the EU, the UK government will have options to change the VAT legislation as they please. As we said in a previous episode, in the EU, the VAT directive overrides national legislation. So this is something that the UK actually will be able to change if they want to, VAT legislation as we know it currently in the UK. But then I haven't seen anything from the UK government changing tremendously VAT legislations. From what we've been seeing with upcoming changes and upcoming new arrangements that the UK is putting into place for online sellers, they actually will be mirroring upcoming legislations that the EU is implementing for online sellers, for marketplaces. So that's quite interesting. So rather than changing tremendously VAT legislation, we can actually expect that the UK will kind of be mirroring what the EU is doing. Yeah, which is, again, it's quite interesting. Some other countries do the same outside of the EU. They kind of follow EU trend and just kind of stick to it. But I wouldn't see anything else than major VAT changes.
That's crazy, isn't it? In the end, that they are harmonizing with a country they've decided to create great discord with. That's quite funny. So, Alex, you were going to come in then.
That's okay. I was just going to add that actually the one kind of big change, I guess, for e-commerce sellers is that marketplaces will start to take on the responsibility of collecting the VAT at the point of sale in the UK after Brexit. Now, there's a load of clauses around this and exceptions to the rule. The first exception is UK businesses. They were specifically left out of the legislation. And that's probably because in the UK, UK businesses have their own threshold, the £85,000 threshold, before they need to VAT register. But the main thing that the UK government was trying to do was to make overseas sellers, to make the marketplaces liable for the overseas sellers' VAT collection. Now, that doesn't take away the responsibility from overseas sellers having to VAT register, especially if they're holding their goods in a UK warehouse. You still need a VAT registration in the UK to then reclaim your import VAT, and any sales on the marketplace would be seen as a sale, an exempt VAT sale to the marketplace. So it still needs to be recorded on your VAT return. However, the marketplace will be recording these sales on or calculating the VAT at the point of sale rather than the seller post-Brexit. So this is a big one for people to be watching out for. Now, the like I said, there's a load of different clauses in the legislation that was laid out, a lot of ifs, ands, or buts that would kind of change it up. So the big thing that we are waiting to see is how the marketplaces such as Amazon are actually going to implement this, because it's one thing for the government to lay out a piece of legislation, but then it's another thing for the marketplaces to interpret the legislation and to how they're going to put it in practice, essentially. So we're kind of waiting to see any announcements, especially from Amazon, about how they're going to be calculating this, at what point they are going to be requiring people to step in or to, you know, take a step back from actually calculating the VAT, especially with varying VAT rates. So this is all going to be coming up. And that's why I highly suggest, if you, you know, haven't checked out our blog before, you go to simplyvat.com/blog. This would be a really key resource over the next few months, where we are going to be updating constantly new legislation. Anything that comes out from the marketplaces, we post and say what it means to you as a seller, because that is going to be vital going into the end of the transition period. It might mean that you don't need to calculate this VAT anymore. You're only going to be reclaiming it. Or, you know, again, it's all kind of up in the air right now. So keep tuned, keep in tune.
Yes, it's a sort of moving situation, particularly on the UK side. I mean, one of the advantages about the EU, I guess, from the perspective of a business owner, is that because it works mostly by trying to get consensus amongst a lot of people who mostly can't agree on the size of a banana before a week's arguing, then I guess things aren't going to change so quickly. I'd imagine that the UK government is free to change things quickly, which could be good, bad, or indifferent. But the point is that we've got to keep abreast of that sort of changing environment. And yes, the blog sounds like a great place to check it out. What I really like is that you guys are very good at explaining things in simple terms and also putting it into terms that are relevant for e-commerce sellers. I, a few months ago, maybe a year or so ago, registered to get updates from the official government website around Brexit, and honestly, it's so piecemeal that it's hard to make much sense of it. So this sounds like a great resource. Final question is just a little bit of a sort of, again, you're not corporate lawyers, company lawyers, I appreciate, but the idea of getting around some of these complications that will be ensuing by having a UK business having a subsidiary business in the EU is an obvious possibility. And I know Estonia is famously putting itself forward. Is there a possibility, given what you were saying about Northern Ireland basically acting as if it's within the EU for VAT on goods only, is there any mileage in trying to get into, say, an English, Welsh, or Scottish business establishing a Northern Ireland subsidiary?
Yeah, again, as we said, this is only for goods purposes. So I would say, what's interesting, again, what we say with Northern Ireland is ultimately you will be able to trade from Northern Ireland into the rest of the EU as if you were still part of the EU. So again, only for goods purposes. So for example, you would be able to benefit from upcoming simplifications as well coming into the EU next year. and that also for you know, distance selling goods as well. So it could be full vets on goods, it could make sense, but then whether that would bring up, you know, other requirements that I'm not familiar with, because we only deal with VAT, but I suppose for goods it would make sense. What you need to know as well is that this arrangement is temporary, so it's only for 4 years. And in 4 years, the Northern Ireland Assembly will be able to confirm whether they want to keep going with this arrangement. So, yeah, it could go on for forever in theory. But actually, if you take it just as a temporary arrangement for now until they find another solution, it could make sense. But it could also bring up more obligations that I'm not necessarily aware of. Yeah, that would be my beyond that.
You're taking it. Well, thank you. That's great. I mean, I think sometimes accounting and tax experts can hint at a legal area to then take to one's lawyer. I mean, obviously, there will be complications there, but I think it sounds like an interesting thing to explore. I know that maybe it's just as random to establish a business or a subsidiary in Estonia in the end. That also sounds a little bit somehow slightly odd, considering Estonia is a long way geographically from any of the Amazon sort of countries, whether you're talking about the marketplaces or the places where they store inventory. But anyway, it's worth exploring some edge cases because there might be some cunning dodges. Even if it lasts for 4 years, that's worth having in my view. So listen, we better wrap this up. We've talked about a huge amount of stuff. Very grateful for your guidance through these rapids and these crazy waters. But it does sound like we're finally getting some clarity, which, if nothing else, in the Brexit area is something to be very grateful for. I would suggest very strongly that anyone who's selling anywhere near the EU or UK just does get some advice from you guys, which is amazing. fba.com/simplyvat. You can go and book in a consultation. Any sort of parting thoughts or guidance principles or that you want to put across before we wrap?
Well, the best thing to do is re-listen to this. Louise has put together a great little checklist. Maybe you didn't have the points, but the gist is there. And I think take those steps right away, because different things might take different lengths of time. And, you know, we're only approaching 4 months away from the deadline of the transition period. So I think follow Louise's guidance on which steps to take first, where you should be looking. And at the end of the day, if you need further assistance, talk to an expert. Don't leave it to yourself, because you could be interpreting the legislation incorrectly, or an expert might have the inside information for you in order to guide you or give you suggestions based on their expertise and experience. So I would say I'll leave it at that.
That's great. Well, look, it just remains for me to say a very big thank you to both Louise Busmal and Alex Wyatt of Simply VAT. Many, many thanks for guiding us through this topic.
Thanks for having us. Speak soon, I'm sure.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks so much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of amazing FBA podcasts. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Unami's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com.